Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A new television talent tackled the age-old issue of Better Parenthood with Bad Dad Rehab, TV1's latest original movie happening Sunday night. Karanda Kiki McKnight is Bad Dad's writer and the new talent joining me next. Are we a smart TV society? It sure appears that way as the first half of 2016 wraps up. At least half of the American public owns a smart television set or a product making TV smart, such as Apple TV or Roku, according to new research. That also infers greater use of these products to watch, transact, or interact with what's on the set. What's the next tier? Well, we'll learn later this hour from video news editor Will Richmond. Also ahead, our classic trivia question of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. 8 degrees at the top of this hour here in New York. We welcome you to a special edition of the program All About Television. We're usually with you Mondays and Fridays at this very same hour, and I'm delighted that you are joining us, and if you like us on Wednesday, well, we hope you make us a regular habit when we're normally on the air. So wonderful guests coming your way this hour, and we invite you, as always, be part of the program. It's so simple. Just pick up the phone, make your voice felt, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe right here on Blog Talk Radio. Another way you get involved is our chat room. You'll find it at blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's SimonApple04 by name and just waiting for you to be involved. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Over the years on this program, we have tried to showcase as much of the new talent coming into this medium, and we've done it in several ways. We've showcased TV projects like the New York Television Festival and Series Fest, which happened this past weekend in Denver, Colorado. In fact, on another edition of our show coming up next Tuesday, we will have some of the winners of that festival live with us and live with you. Some other ways that people get involved are through very unique film festivals like the American Black Film Festival, which has been held every May or June, lately in New York, but this year in Miami. And for the last couple of years, the American Black Film Festival has held what is called a TV screenwriting competition, where people who want to create an original made-for-TV movie get that opportunity, and the winner gets their screenplay presented the next year as a made-for-TV movie somewhere. Since last year, TV1 has had that honor, and the latest example of that honor takes place this Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It's called Bad Dad Rehab. Malik Yoba from New York Undercover, another wonderful project, is among the stars. And we've got right now, coming your way from Los Angeles, an InterWay exclusive, the writer of that program, Bad Dad Rehab, Karanda Kiki McKnight. Kiki, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, what has it been like for you to see your screenplay, your winning screenplay from last year, turned into a movie this Sunday night?
It's a thrill. I mean, it's a rush and such an exhilarating feeling. It's just so much because as a writer, you're locked into your mind and your imagination. You're all by yourself and you're creating these worlds, and then to see that come to life as a living, breathing thing with actors and cameras and lights and sets, and it's just wonderful. It's just exhilarating. I'm so excited.
Why did you decide to enter television this way, to do it through a made-for-TV movie?
Well, it's not that I decided. That was the opportunity that was presented. So I just seized on the opportunity, and I think TV1 under Brad Siegel did an exceptional job to make this available for writers, because this is the only contest that I know about, and I've been writing for some time, that not only does the winner, you know, get, you know, the opportunity to come and see, you know, be presented at this wonderful festival, the ABFF Festival, but you also get to see what you wrote become a film, and no other contest does that. And it becomes a film within a year's time. So that's fantastic. No one else does that. Usually it's just a monetary prize, or you might get a meeting with some kind of Hollywood agent or manager or producer, but never do they actually follow through and produce it and then air it and then give you a big splashy premiere with it. That is unprecedented, and it's fantastic.
We have a call, and we're going to take it in a moment. But first, explain what your career road has been like. Before you entered this festival, had you tried to get involved with television in some way? Did you pitch a movie or a television series to anybody?
Yes, I did. I started as a writer's assistant on some television sitcoms and shows. And as a writer's assistant, you're around writers, and of course, your next step is to become a television writer. And so I went that route. It's a very tough and very competitive field. And I also wrote what's called spec scripts in film. So you're just looking for that open door. You're looking for that opportunity that you can take to go to the next level, but it is a challenge, and so that's why we desperately need contests like this, like TV One's screenplay competition, because those doors are very heavily guarded, and unless you have a helping hand to help you break through, it's very difficult. It's very difficult, and there are a lot of talented writers of color out there that the opportunities are just not available for them to break in. So this is one of those really, really prime ones that allows you to break in and then have something to show for it as you go further and expand. You have some work, you have some material that you can point to and say, hey, did you see my film? It actually was on TV. And that's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing.
We have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, you're on the air. I guess that person hung up, so if you wanted to dial back, please do. We'll try to get you on the air. What sitcom did you work on?
I worked as a writer's assistant for Everybody Hates Chris and JAG, J-A-G, which was a drama, and for a sitcom that Boris Kojo and Nicole Ari Parker had. It was a short-lived sitcom called Second Time Around that producer Ralph Farquhar, who created Moesha, who now is the executive producer for Hollywood Husbands on BET with Kevin Hart, he produced some time ago. So that was my television experience. And then, you know, I worked in for entertainment companies in one capacity or another, from Paramount Studios, CBS Films, Nickelodeon. So I've always touched on entertainment and film and television in some way or another.
Mm-hmm. So talk about Bad Dad Rehab. Why did you decide to take this particular subject on? The subject's been explored in different ways by different networks, whether through TV series or one-shot specials or movies. Why did you decide to go this route?
Well, because it is such a subject that everybody or nearly everyone has some kind of experience with, whether directly or peripherally, and it's a very sensitive area and one that discussion needed to happen. I'm a single mother of a 19-year-old, and I have my own issues in that area and my own battles in that area, but I didn't want it to be a piece about male bashing because that was too simple to me. We can talk for hours and days and days and days about all the negative things. I really wanted to examine the pathology of a deadbeat dad and then examine that there are different categories of deadbeat dads and not all deadbeat dads are created equal. So I wanted to really open the dialogue for that. I wanted it to be a place, a conversation piece where people can come together. And hopefully a healing process would begin and people can see things from, you know, the other perspective. A mother can see things from a father's perspective. A father can see things from a mom's perspective, see the bigger picture with their children. And it's a much-needed dialogue that has to happen in our community. So that was the motivation to do it. And what I did is I posted a question on Facebook asking single moms to share their deadbeat dad stories. And that's what I got. And I got pages and pages of responses. So it's a really sensitive subject. And I just didn't want to approach it the conventional way.
How much of what you went through, Kiki, ended up being in the screenplay and ultimately on the screen Sunday night?
Not my story personally, but a kind of a stew, kind of a little bit of this, a little bit of that, some here, something there. So taking that and kind of shaping it into a new animal altogether. So, you know, to write, you always have to come from a true place. Something always has to resonate within you, that something that you experienced that's true, even if you didn't experience the story directly. But it has to come from a true place emotionally. And so it definitely was something that was gnawing at me emotionally. But, again, I didn't want it to be a piece that was male bashing. I think that's counterproductive. Because I'm trying to understand it myself. Like, why is this cycle so pervasive in our community? What's the method? What's the means? What's the madness? Where is that coming from? So I really wanted to embrace the guys. And I do want to say, you know, as a single mom and, you know, going through my ups and downs, recognize the value of having fathers involved in their children's lives. And it's so important to have that open door for these gentlemen to know that, you know, whether there's friction between the parents, you know, the children are always the central focus. So that's what I wanted to say with this piece, and that was my personal stake in it, that, you know, the door is always open for the child. That is the most important thing, regardless if they be adults, have different opinions or what have you. So that was the motivation, and I apparently share that opinion with a lot of women from what I've been seeing from the response.
Bad Dad Rehab is TV1's latest original movie, and it premieres this Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It is also the second annual winner of the American Black Film Festival TV Screenwriting Contest. And we've got the winner of that festival from last year, whose script you will see showcased on the program this Sunday night. That's Karanda Kiki McKnight. She joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum, who is live from New York. Happy to have you with us on this special midweek edition of the program All About Television. We're normally with you Mondays and Fridays at the very same hour here on Blog Talk Radio. If a question or comment for Kiki, don't be shy. Ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, just waiting for you. On Friday, we don't have a guest yet. We hope to have one by the time we're on the air, less than 48 hours from now. We will have the answer to our classic trivia question. And then next week, we're joining you on Tuesday and Friday. And on Tuesday, among our guests, we'll have the executive producer of the longest-running drama on Hulu, that's East Los High with the all-Latino cast. We had the creators on the show several years ago, and they're going into their fourth season on July 15th. Katie Mulda will join us. She is the executive producer of the show. And as we told you a few minutes ago, we will have some of the key winners of last weekend's Series Fest in Denver, Colorado, including the creators of the best comedy winner called Touch/Fiction and the creator-producer of the LRA Network Diversity and Storytelling Award, Life's a Drag. That's all coming up Tuesday, not Monday, Tuesday, July 5th, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. How long did it take for the screenplay to come to life in terms of going into production?
How long did it take for life as far as production? I think it was from the pre-development stage until they started. I think it was probably 3 months, I would say, which is very short to get production going, editing, and all that other stuff, post work. So that was probably the production schedule, about 3 months. And they were even doing some fine-tuning at the premiere at ABFF up until that time in June 18th when it premiered in ABFF. So, yeah, it was very short, only 15 shooting days. Carl Seaton is the director, and he did a fantastic job under those constraints. Was able to get some very fantastic performances out of the cast. And it was, but it was really under the gun from start to finish.
Mm-hmm. Now, the plot deals with three fathers who, coming from different backgrounds, are all connected by the fact that they come to realize that, hey, I'm not as great a father as I really could be. And they sort of end up in this sort of tough love rehab environment where Malik Yoba, who I've enjoyed for years in all sorts of places, starting with New York Undercover, plays the head of this rehab facility. And therein lies sort of a tale within a tale And I'd like to have you talk about that, because I'm wondering when you heard what Relief told you and why this part was particularly close to home, if you will, using a little cliche. I'm curious what you thought about that.
What I thought about Malik's comment about it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, as the writer, I'm not always privy to these conversations when they're casting. And the story of the four guys and their battle with coming to grips with, you know, truth, that they're not the best of dads, and then coming to this rehab and kind of like dealing with that and confronting the truth and dealing with their demons and getting to the root of their issues is the motivation and I want to say the main driving point of the story, but having somebody of the caliber of Malik Yoba to play the counselor, John Leon, who is incidentally named after my father in kind of a salute and homage to my dad, my wonderful dad. Malik coming aboard, playing this dad, is like, beyond my expectations. And the fact that he does this in real life, where he talks to real dads and he talks to the formerly incarcerated. This is his life's work. This is his mission. It just adds more authenticity to the project, adds more authenticity to the role that he played and how it will resonate and connect with the audience. So it was, like, fantastic. You know, I can't take credit that I'm the one that thought of Malik, because I really didn't know that he would do it. But I'm so glad that casting reached out to him, and I'm so glad that he said yes, because he definitely brings a level of standard to this production.
And just to explain further, he actually, about 18, 19 years ago, started an organization, not exactly rehab, but sort of a support group for fathers who are having different issues or different crises.
Yeah, Fathers, I think he calls it Fathers Incorporated. I'm not sure. I think it's called Fathers Incorporated. And yes, and that's why having him aboard, like he mentioned in our Q&A session, he's like, this is the first time where he's, as an actor, that he didn't have to act. Like, it was so natural for him. This is just what he does. And I'm so happy for that.
Should point out that the fathers are played by Robert Richard, Rob Riley, Wesley Johnson, and Candy Burris, all of whom have had some very interesting credits in the course of their careers, everything from Chocolate City to One-on-One to Soul Man, to Real Housewives of Atlanta, believe it or not. Go ahead.
No, Rick Gonzalez. Did you mention Rick Gonzalez? Because he's one of the dads. He has a cameo part in there. But the four main characters are Rick Gonzalez, Robert Richard, Robert Riley, and Wesley Jonathan, who did a great job, fantastic job.
Mm-hmm. He worked with Roger Bob, who has had a very interesting career, started with Tyler Perry, did House of Pain, was the writing producer on Meet the Browns. We had him on when he was involved with Tyler Perry's work, and then he went on to do the Ricky Smiley Show for TV1, which ran a couple of years. What's it been like working with him and his colleagues with his own production company, Bobcat?
Bob and Roger and Angie Bones are very cool people, very hands-on in their experience, but, you know, Roger is very, he allows his directors to direct. He told me in a conversation that, you know, as a director himself, he gets it. And, you know, it's hard because he's a producer and director. So you have to kind of police yourself and what you can and can't do in your time of shooting, you know, your film. And he was very giving as a producer, as far as I can observe. So my time on the set with Carl and, you know, very good. A teacher, you know, teaching me the ropes of production and how it works. It was a very enjoyable time working with Roger.
Mm-hmm. In putting the screenplay together, did you go to organizations like the one you were depicting in the film, rehab organizations or support groups or tough love groups that deal with fathers?
I didn't go there. I just did a lot of, you know, research online. There's a wealth of organizations and programs around the nation that offer support for fathers. And they're very underrated and under, I think, advertised or marketed, because the resources are there, you know, but they just have to be made known to the public. And I think hopefully this film will allow those places, those programs and organizations to get the light that they need and the publicity they need, the exposure, because they're desperately needed. I hope now that, you know, men will be making those phone calls. Women will be making those phone calls for their men to get the help and the services that they need, because they're there. They're definitely there.
We're speaking with Karanda Kiki McKnight. She is the author of TV1's latest original movie. It's called Bad Dad Rehab. Liz Yoba is one of the stars in the film. And the program premieres this Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on TV1. Karanda joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour right here on Tomorrow We Televise. From Applebaum here with you, and wherever you're listening to us across the country or around the world, we're delighted you are here and joining us. 80 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, where we are based. We're normally with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. And if you have a question or a comment for Kiki, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Next Friday on the program, we will have the producer-director of a very unusual Discovery Channel project. It's called Hello World. It's a mini-series that features some of the top singers of our day and dealing with the forces of nature. We will have the producer-director of this project, Sarah Enright. That's coming up next Friday, July 8th, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And see the clips of Hello World. It's one of the most unique projects Discovery Channel has done in a great while. As you saw your screenplay come to life, Kiki, what really stood out for you in terms of how the actors, how the directors, how everyone treated your words?
Well, I mean, you write it on the page and you have a sense of what the story is in your head, but then, you know, other collaborators come into play once you start shooting. And Carl Seton had, you know, he had his, he added his sauce and his seasoning and spices to it, and you know, even helping to tweak a few of the characters as far as breathing, you know, a certain perspective in them, and then the actors come and they add their, you know, their special sauce, and then what happens is that you have this, you know, beautiful collaboration where all colors are showing in these characters, and I think for the most part, that happens successfully. You, as a writer, you're not always privy to what happens on the set or what happens while they're shooting. You're kind of your job is done as far as providing the script. But through TV1, it was more inclusive, and in that I could, you know, come to the set and I can, you know, chime in and I can offer, you know, suggestions and that kind of thing. And just be, you know, just be there and just to see all of it unfold. It's a very engaging process from, you know, the people who handle craft service all the way to the people who add, you know, the final touches with coloring and music and the soundtrack. And all of this, you know, plays such a vital role in the audience connecting with the material. And so my hat's off to the crew and to Carl and his team for doing this in such a concise amount of time. Something that looked very, very good. Very good on screen.
You mentioned earlier the social media reaction to your film, and it's been mostly positive. There has been some negative. Some people have commented on Facebook and other places, oh, this is just another bashing of deadbeat dads or bashing of fatherhood specifically. And on the other side of the coin, D'Angelo Proctor, who is head of original film TV1, had this to say in a press release. It's this: movies like this don't come around often where you see the many complexities of fatherhood. Many people think that being a deadbeat dad is connected to money, but it's not. Fatherhood is about presence and not presence, and we see that in this film. Talk about the social media reaction, but also about how you wanted to show presence. That's with CE at the end, as opposed to presence, what people give and get.
The social media response has been, wow, overwhelming. And I'm looking at some of these comments, and I'm like, people are really going in, I mean, really hard on their feelings on the subject, and that's good. because it's getting people to talk, and that was the whole point. This is supposed to engage and ignite conversations. But, I mean, it's getting mixed, not mostly mixed, mostly positive, but there are some mixed reactions because initially the title kind of throws people off. Initially it was called Deadbeat Dad Rehab, but TV One opted to change that because they didn't want to alienate people who might think that it's harsh. And that's the one thing that people think when you say Bad Dad Rehab, that this is going to be shaming and male bashing and that kind of thing, and it's so not that at all. And so we're getting this open dialogue online through social media where women are talking about it, men are talking about it, and the men are so like, you know, I'm a good dad or I'm this and this is what happened, and it's getting them to talk because I don't think previously these kinds of things have been happening where you can engage in these conversations. This is giving them a platform to do that. And it's been like, wow, the responses have been wow. What people are saying, and we did want to make it clear that, you know, these are examining different types of dads because we didn't want to lump everybody. I didn't want to lump everybody together when I wrote this, that, you know, if you know, there are certain, like, there's a character, Sean, in this piece, and he's not really a deadbeat dad in heart. He's a deadbeat dad through technicality. He's missed several child support payments, but he's a dedicated father, and that goes into the issue of being present versus giving presence, because Sean is present. He's just not able to provide financially the way he would like for his children, so he's technically considered a deadbeat dad. But this is a dilemma with a lot of men who don't have the financial means but have every intention and the heart and love and dedication to be a part of their children's lives. And these are the things that we have to examine. We can't shut out the throw out the baby with the bathwater because of, you know, these kinds of problems going on. And if we have discussions, honest discussions, loving discussions, you know, open discussions, respectful discussions, I think this kind of film will help to heal those wounds in a very significant way. So I'm very pleased with the social media response. I think, you know, that's exactly the kind of fire we were trying to kindle, and it's doing a good job.
Kiki, what's next for you in television? Where do you want to go?
I want to continue making good quality films, be it on television or in theatrical wide releases. It's important to me that whatever I write or put my hands to, that it has some redemptive value to it. It's something empowering about it. It's something that's going to lift somebody's spirits. It's something that's going to help somebody take hold of a dream or rethink their life in a positive way. So I definitely want to continue on these platforms trying to create social change through entertainment. I think that's so important, and especially in today's climate with so much divisiveness and going on in our media and what's going on in the climate globally. I think it's time for us to have things that bring people together or help people understand one another better, so that we're walking in a different perspective of our human connectedness on another level. I think that's so important, and film and television has the power to do that. So I look forward to drawing my sword and adding more to that.
Bad Dad Rehab, TV One's latest original movie and the second annual winner of the American Black Film Festival Original TV Screenwriting Contest, premieres this Sunday night, 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Check your local listings where TV One is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program and for organizations that deal with the subject matter of the program, here's where you go online, www.tv1.tv. That's www.tv1.tv. Karana Keaton McKnight, the writer of Bad Dad Rehab, congratulations on the win. Congratulations on getting this film made and dealing with a very, very sensitive and very important topic. And all the best with the premiere this Sunday night, and all the best with TV down the road. And I agree with you. Let's have more projects like this to expand diversity in the medium.
Thank you so much, Simon. I appreciate it. Thank you all.
You're very welcome, Kiki. And you're welcome back anytime. Any new TV projects coming your way, give us a call. You're always welcome back.
I certainly will. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Kiki McKnight joining us live from Los Angeles on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We are with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And we'll be back with more of the program after we pause for a moment with some thoughts from the fine folks at Audible.com. And if you are a fan of biographies, whether you see them or you hear them, you'll like this. One of the new titles on Audible.com is The Life, Reign, and Success of LeBron James. He just won the MVP award for his incredible performance in the NBA Finals. And now you can get more about someone who's not just becoming a superstar on the basketball court, but a superstar on television with such projects as his upcoming CNBC series, which premieres in August, and Survivor's Remorse, which will be starting soon its third season on Starz. The Life, Reign, and Success of LeBron James. And you can have it free by trying for 30 days, audibletrial.com/televised. That's the URL for audible.com, which is a leading provider of spoken digital entertainment and information. With over 180,000 titles to choose from, all different genres, new classic stuff, radio, TV, everything up for you. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now through Blog Talk Radio. So remember, sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You can get that one free audiobook, whether it's LeBron James' autobiography, the Twilight Zone radio dramas, Charlie Rose's interviews from public television and Bloomberg TV, and a whole lot more. And you get a one-month trial of the service, plus great customer service because Audible is an Amazon company. So check it out, audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. Sign up now and have the world of audio entertainment information inspiration coming your way. When we come back, our good friend Will Richmond from VU News joins us to talk about what may be the era at last of smart TV sets and smart TV devices and their implications for all of us. We will get to Will from Brooks and actually pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. www.blogtalkradio.com, where there's 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your help in one of the most popular programs in all of radio, Movie Geeks United. Check it out Friday, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's featured available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Plus, you can catch this program and others on podcast form in the iTunes podcast app of Apple TV 2.0. Welcome back for the second half of Tomorrow We Televise on this special Wednesday edition. Happy to have you with us the next last day of June 2016. Tom and Applebaum with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our guest ahead, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That number go anywhere or catch us across the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We are a day and a half away from wrapping up the first half of 2016, and there definitely is a short list of themes that have made this first half possible. The big rise of scripted television, the increased effort to expand diversity in the medium, the emergence of virtual reality, and a whole lot more. But perhaps the biggest story so far this year is the American public embracing smart TV sets and smart TV devices like Roku, Google Chromecast, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, according to new research, at least half the American public, maybe as high as 70%, now has a smart TV set or device, and increasingly, they are using them. Where do we go from here, the rest of this year and beyond? Let's ask my next guest. Joining us live from Boston, the popular founder and editor of the wonderful website and company Video News, back with us again, Will Richmond. Will, great to have you back.
Great to be back, Simon. Thanks for having me.
You're very, very welcome, Will. Are we at last in an era of smart TVs?
Well, I think as you just recapped some of the numbers, certainly show that there's obviously critical mass at this point. You quoted one of the numbers on penetration. I've seen numbers as high as 65% of U.S. homes now with some type of a connected TV, or that includes smart TVs and connected TV devices in their home. And so at least one, that's up from like 24-25% just 5 years ago. I've also seen that upwards of three quarters of those homes that do have a connected TV have more than one in their house. So I think it's absolutely fair to say that there's critical mass of connected TVs and smart TVs in U.S. homes now, and we're starting to see what some of the real effects of having that critical mass out there is.
And Will, are we also seeing critical mass in how these sets are being used, as in being able to watch the web being able to play games, being able to interact and perhaps transact over the television set. Because some of this new research is suggesting that, yes, this is how people are watching Netflix. This is how people are watching Hulu. This is how people are watching increasingly YouTube. This is how people are watching Crackle, and that they're now starting to use those Apple TV apps. Those 6,000 apps that we understand are now going on, everything from Airbnb, Zillow, Guilt Group, Orbitz, which is on Amazon Fire, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That indeed, this the TV set is still the way that people are watching all of this programming, and they seem to be doing it without, at least for the most part, cutting the cord.
Right. Well, there's no question that the advent of connected TVs has brought about a whole new paradigm in terms of how people are actually watching TV. So the old model of basically turning on a TV and scrolling through a bunch of channels and browsing around and seeing what's on is not the way connected TVs are used. It's much more of an app-centric type of environment, as you just said. Viewers firing up their TV or their smart TV or their connected TV device, and then diving into a Netflix app or an Amazon app or a Crackle app for relatively directed searching and browsing. So that's really the model, more of an on-demand type of model. We've also seen lots of research coming out around how longer form online viewing is really the province of these connected TV devices. So whereas a smartphone might be used for more kind of snackable video, short form clips, when people are in their living rooms and they're watching on a connected TV, they tend to watch the way they've always watched TV in that sense of watching longer form programs, live sports, other live events. And that's really, in a sense, kind of leveling the playing field in the living room vis-a-vis the pay TV set-top box, which is really always controlled, not always, but, you know, for the last 50 years has basically controlled what the TV experience was like. So we see that leveling of the playing field between these new connected TV devices and pay TV set-top boxes, and that's really becoming a very mainstream experience now in U.S. homes.
Mm-hmm. Is it fair now to say, Will, that this is why, or this has a major impact on this big boom of original scripted television? That Netflix, it seems you can't go by a week without Netflix making at least one announcement about a new scripted series. Or Hulu now calling themselves an upfront network rather than a digital content network. Or YouTube finally at their brandcast last month here in New York acknowledging, hey, more and more people are watching us on the television set rather than the smartphone or the tablet or some other way.
Well, I think that's right. And I think what it speaks to is that there's something of a virtuous cycle going on right now. So we've already talked about a number of these points. You've mentioned them, but we see a lot of original TV programming being produced by some reports, over 400 different TV shows in 2015. That's up tenfold from just 10 years ago, a lot of it being produced by these SVOD providers who, of course, don't have, for the most part, are not accessible in any other way than through connected TV devices or on other types of devices, desktops, et cetera. So the money that they're pouring into it, the tens of millions of subscribers that they have, that Nielsen reported this week that SVOD penetration in the U.S. is now above 50% of homes. So we see those factors. We see the falling price of smart TVs, the inexpensive access to these devices like Chromecast, Fire TV Stick, et cetera, and certainly the fact that there's greater monetization opportunities and long-form content. So I think all of that is really coming together in a very virtuous cycle that basically spurs more of each of these elements to happen. So each is kind of reinforcing the other. You think about the more connected TVs are out there, the bigger the universe is for a Netflix or an Amazon or a Hulu to feel like their investment in long-form programming is going to be seen on the TV in that ideal viewing experience. And so that just spurs them to invest more. Conversely, when we see them investing more in original content, it spurs the TV manufacturers to reduce the prices of their smart TVs because they can sell them at greater scale. So we've seen the price of these TVs really come down. I mean, you look at something like the Roku TV, the 55-inch 4K Roku TV now available for less than $500. That's a huge decrease, and obviously you get all the Roku, all the apps that are available with Roku in that TV set. So you see these massive decreases in the price of smart TVs over the past 5 years, and so all these trends are kind of reinforcing each other into this virtuous cycle. And for my part, I don't see any of this slowing down anytime soon.
Earlier today, incidentally, Roku announced a new deal with Hitachi to make smart TV sets incorporating Roku into those sets from Hitachi. It's one of several companies that they're working with. But
yep.
Roku is a kind of a situation where it's available both by a plug-in device, a streaming stick, or a TV set itself.
Absolutely. Roku's been one of the real market leaders in terms of driving penetration of connected TV devices, and again, reinforcing that virtuous cycle that we've seen in the market happening.
Will Richmond is the founding editor of Video News. It's a wonderful resource. They come out with a daily email newsletter that showcases the world of online and the world of smart TVs, et cetera, et cetera. And I get it every day. It's really wonderful. He also has several conferences here in New York. One that was on a few weeks ago, the Online Video Ad Summit, took place at the Westin Times Square. And he's got a project called Video Schmooze that usually comes up in December. Will joins us live from Boston this half hour. I'm from Avi Televised. I'm Applebaum down the coast from him in New York, 80 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Will, ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, sign in Apple 04 by name. Coming up later this half hour, Classic Trivia Question of the Week. If you're first with the correct answer, you can win the brand new book, Twin Peaks FAQ, published by Applause. So, Will, where do you think this whole smart TV phenomenon is going the rest of this year?
Well, I think, as I said before, I think it's really going to continue accelerating as the year goes on and even going forward into 2017 and thereafter, Simon, because, again, you look at the underlying trends and how they each reinforce each other, and I think that that's just going to continue as we go forward. The other factor to keep in mind here, Simon, which is really pretty incredible when you stop and think about it, is the improvement in quality of broadband infrastructure, both wired and wireless. So you think about wired broadband access in the U.S. now, and there are lots of people that I know that are getting 50 megabit per second or greater service, and that's up probably tenfold or more versus maybe just 5 or 10 years ago. So that increase in the capability of broadband infrastructure is what really allows Netflix and Amazon and others to be able to deliver this super high quality video to the living room, to these big TVs, and have the viewer who's accustomed to instant channel changing get that same type of experience with online video streams. So, it's now routine for people to be able to plop themselves down on the couch in the living room, turn on their smart TV or turn on their Roku or their Chromecast or what have you, and be able to watch a program on Netflix or others in HD, full screen, no buffering, instant on, instant off. That's a phenomenal experience, and I see more and more people going forward coming to understand and value that experience. Binge viewing, of course, has been another big underlying trend that has kept people glued to their TVs. So I see all of this continuing to strengthen as we go forward, and really don't foresee anything on the horizon at this point that you never know what could come up, but really I don't foresee anything that could potentially slow the trends down.
Apple just had their latest Worldwide Developer Conference, and it was fascinating what was said about Apple TV and what wasn't said or what wasn't reported. 9 months earlier, Tim Cook introduces Apple TV, big audience in San Francisco, and says the future of TV is apps. And he showcases the way you can use Airbnb, or the way you can use Zillow, or the way you can use Guild Group to not just watch a piece of video, but also interact with it, whether it's book something through Zillow, use Airbnb to handle a transaction, that kind of thing. And it seems that at this Worldwide Developer Conference, that didn't happen. You didn't get a lot of, even though you now have 6,000 apps, and they're not all, and they're all over the place, you got this sense that they weren't showcasing, like, here's what's new, what's cutting edge, that will take everything to the next level. And what's your sense about that? And also about, you know, where you see, are we going to see, do you think, finally, an era of interactive television now where people will book a flight through Orbitz or TripAdvisor, or they will use a home advisor to make an appointment through the TV set?
Well, first of all, Apple TV has continued to be a relatively successful product in the market. If you look at some data, it's about 6 months old now, but data from Q4 2015 from Freewheel, when they count up ad views by connected TV devices, Apple TV still has 44% of all ad views. Roku follows with 34%, and then all game consoles at 15%. So Apple TV is still a very important player in the market. I think, though, to your point about Tim Cook's sort of examples of what people might be doing on their Apple TVs, some of that hype has fallen short of reality. And, I think part of it is that we have all these other devices that are so effective at letting us do the things that we want to do, whether it's a desktop or a tablet or a smartphone, the list goes on, that I don't know that there's actually a kind of a screaming need to be able to book your next Airbnb on your Apple TV. So that's one of the things that sometimes gets lost in the discussion. I think about the power of these smart TVs is that, you know, just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean that that's the preferred place to do that thing. So remains to be seen how expansive the Apple TV use case actually ends up being. I think from a video perspective, the use case is very strong and arguably as strong or stronger than some of the other devices on the market. One of the issues for Apple TV, of course, is that it's a relatively expensive connected TV device as compared to a Chromecast or a Fire TV stick, et cetera. So that, I think, has sort of hemmed in Apple TV's penetration a little bit. But certainly for people that are in the Apple ecosystem and like to be able to move content around and access content on their different devices, I think it's been pretty successful.
Mm-hmm. One thing you wonder about is how much promotion and marketing and public relations are some of the companies involved in this environment are doing. Give you two examples. One, Petcom, which does a series of events every 3 months or so here in New York, did not for the first time have a smart TV set or a smart TV device exhibited. However, they had MasterCard exhibit, a grocery app, and a way to buy groceries or get groceries using a Samsung refrigerator. And the thing I wondered was, why isn't this app on a Samsung smart TV set? It's like the Samsung refrigerator people are doing something that the smart TV folks are not doing. The other thing that you wonder about is, why isn't Amazon or Apple or Google really, with Android TV, for example, doing events here in New York and around the country that involve the press, bring developers together, so we see what's going on? You sometimes get the impression that the American public is more up to speed about where smart TVs are at and where they're going than the companies themselves or the press in general, because there seems to be very little contact or very little opportunity for people in public to see what's going on.
Well, on the first example, Simon, the idea of Samsung refrigerator instead of Samsung TV, I think that kind of speaks to the point that I was just making that, and I'm not familiar with that specific example, but I think it sort of more broadly illustrates that Samsung's thinking is probably more that it's more likely that people are going to, you know, order something that's they're low on in their refrigerator right when they're at their refrigerator than when they're going to go, back to their smart TV. And, you know, a great example of that, I think, which is, you know, not without its controversy, is what Amazon has been doing both with Echo and also with these so-called dash buttons where you can, you know, press and kind of reorder a product from a various place in your house. So I think with this, and we're straying a little bit from our focus, but this whole concept of Internet of Things brings forward the idea that you know, there may be just more ideal circumstances for people to do certain types of things than the TV itself. And again, we, you know, we want to be careful about not making the TV's mission more expansive than it actually is. It's a great device for what it does, which of course is delivering the optimal viewing experience. But, you know, is it the best place to be ordering a dozen eggs? Is it the best place to book a Airbnb? You know, is it the best place to go, you know, find out what the weather is? You know, it's tempting to believe that it is. There are a lot of people very invested in that notion. It certainly have been for at least 20 years or more since the sort of advent of the idea of interactive TV. But I think what we've seen over time, particularly with smartphones proliferating, is that, you know, audiences and users, consumers, find their own way in terms of what's the optimal use case for particular devices.
I mean, part of it, Will, I think, is that if you don't talk about it or you don't showcase it, you have no shot to see whether, in fact, there's a market appeal. We had CE Week last week here in New York, and there was, during their conference program, for the second year in a row, not one single panel that talked about smart TVs and smart TV devices and smart TV apps. If you don't showcase it, how can you... how can the public, you know, have a shot or a fair shot at seeing whether or not these applications work? If Apple doesn't come to New York or come to Los Angeles or Chicago and bring the app developer together and let's see some of the unique things they're doing, whether it's NASA on the television set or Airbnb, if you just keep it to yourself or you come up with a press release, as Amazon sometimes does, where you don't give a name of a person attached, they call a media hotline, the hotline doesn't work. You know, what shot do you have? But you raise a very interesting point, by the way, which is Siri and Alexa and some of these ways you talk back to the set. And that could very well be a very important implication in terms of whether these services can work. If I know Amazon, for example, is trying to bring Alexa to Amazon Fire in a number of different ways, for example, reading e-books on the TV set, and that could be the big surprise element.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we would agree on, Simon, is it's very hard to predict what the next thing is that's going to catch fire, so to speak. And I think you're absolutely right that there's a certain amount of promotion and just awareness building that companies need to do in order to get the ball rolling downhill. And so if they don't do that, then, you know, a new feature, a new app is going to have very little a chance of success in the first place. There's just no question about that.
Will, the time we have left, let me give you an opportunity to share about a company that you see coming down the pike the second half of this year that we should all keep our eye on in the area of television.
Well, I think that there are a lot of companies that are doing lots of interesting things in this whole emerging video ecosystem. But the one that I continue to keep my eye on is the one that I mentioned before, which is Amazon. They are putting a lot of money toward video and doing it in a lot of interesting, creative ways. So, one of the programs that they launched toward the end of 2015, so about 6 months ago, is what they call the Streaming Partners Program. And that basically allows Amazon Prime or Amazon Video subscribers to tack on, to basically choose from and then sort of tack on to their Amazon cart subscriptions to individual SVOD services. So it could be, you know, the Starz service or the Showtime service or Acorn TV or the new comedy service CISO from NBC, et cetera. They're basically a whole Chinese menu of these different SVOD services, and with one click, you basically add the service to your Amazon Prime, and all of that video is then available within the Amazon Prime video player and across all supported devices. So I like that model a lot. I've written about it a number of times because I think that it gives Amazon this ability to drive, to be a great partner in driving subscribers for all these different companies that it works with based on the vast data set that it maintains on its own customers. So, you know, it's one thing to recommend a video to a viewer based on something else they've watched. It's a totally different thing to recommend signing up for an entire SVOD service based on a person's complete e-commerce profile. So I think Amazon's in a really interesting position with that Streaming Partners Program. They currently have several dozen SVOD services available. They said that they'll probably have several dozen more SVOD services available by the end of this year. So I think they're really trying to put their arms around the SVOD industry, proving what kind of a partner they can be. I think that sort of changes the nature of competition between Amazon and Netflix and Hulu. The latter two obviously have been very focused on spending a lot of money on original content, which is something Amazon has done as well. I think Amazon has this completely different competitive lever that it's trying to pull. And so I think, you know, given Amazon's vast resources, it's something to keep a close eye on.
Yeah, I agree. And if Amazon ever decides through Jeff Bezos, we're going to put all of our merchandise, make it available on the TV set for Amazon Fire, I think they could cause a lot of shockwaves and maybe a very big disruptive upheaval in where this is going. I'll give you two others to look at. One is Interlude. It's a company that's trying to do what's called Choose Your Adventure or Choose Your Direction programming. I mentioned at your conference that they're working with CBS on bringing back the Twilight Zone, and maybe it'll go over smart TVs or smart devices. I think they have got very good technology to work. And the second is a project called Alpha involving Legendary, the famous TV producer and also TV series maker. They're working with a number of companies to make this interactive service happen. It would be scripted and unscripted programming that for the most part would be live and very interactive. It'll be interesting to see how Alpha tries to do with CISO and full screen and some of these newer over-the-top or what I would say alternate programming services do. If you want to check out what Will is up to, check out videonews.com and catch his email newsletter. Subscribe to it. It's wonderful reading. And if you're here in the New York area, check out his conferences like the Online Video Ad Summit and the upcoming Video Schmooze. Will, great to have you as always, and have yourself a wonderful weekend and rest of the week and a great holiday weekend, and let's have you back soon.
Okay, thanks for having me, Simon.
You're welcome, Will. Take care. Enjoy. Will Richmond, joining us live from Boston. Before we go, very quickly, classic trivia question of the week. Here's the question in case you missed it on Monday's episode. Who was the original Cagney on Cagney and Lacey? Who was the original Cagney on Cagney and Lacey? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and your mailing address. If you remember the correct answer, you will win Twin Peaks FAQ, the wonderful book about the classic ABC series from David Lynch and Mark Frost, and the upcoming Showtime revival next year from those same two folks, published by Applause. You can also use Twitter to get the answer in, Twitter hashtag TWBT. That's Twitter hashtag TWBT. They talk about the wonderful people at Hopscotch. Find out more about what they do at hopscotch.com. If you missed the question just now, I'll post it tomorrow on my Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag at UBC Simon TWBT. We're back with you on Friday at a regular time at 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, then next Tuesday and Friday as well. If you came in late on the program, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televive. Check out the podcast at iTunes.com and also on Apple TV 2.0 through the iTunes podcast app. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates, Jamie Mexico and Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. The creator and chief executive is Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Tell Live was brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow We Tell Live, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your midweek. We're back Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio. Be safe and be great wherever you are. And until next time, stay well and stay tuned.